Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm the host of Your Legal Rights, Jeff Hayden. Most of us have a generalized knowledge of who to call if you're injured due to the negligent action or perhaps inaction of someone else, say another driver, and would seek out an attorney who practices personal injury. Less known is what would you do if you suffer an injury at the hands of a medical professional? In a personal injury case, it's all about who's at fault. There are many more factors at play in the complex arena of medical malpractice. Was this result a known and reasonable risk? Or was there a mistake? Even if causation is clear, can you even find a lawyer willing to take your case? And if not, why not? There's a system in place to protect medical practitioners and medical facilities, but this may result in otherwise valid cases where justice cannot be attained. Why? Tonight, we talk about the basics of the medical malpractice system. And as always, we want to hear what's on your mind and answer your questions. Our phone number right here is 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. Once again, that's 866-798-8255. As always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's topic, medical malpractice. You're not limited to the exact point we may be in our conversation. Do bear in mind that our guests cannot provide you precise legal or medical advice, as we don't have all the facts relating to your case. But we're happy to pass along the legal principles to assist you in your decision-making. And as always, their guidance mightn't be the positions of their respective employers or clients, but my guests are always here to help and inform. Joining us tonight, a member of the International Academy of Trial Lawyers and the Inner Circle of Advocates, the ultimate plaintiffs organization in the country. James S. Bostwick is a nationally recognized trial lawyer with over 45 years' experience representing catastrophically injured people throughout the United States. He has received numerous awards for his work as a civil plaintiff's trial lawyer. Mr. Bostwick has obtained several record results for his clients over the years, including the largest medical malpractice jury verdict in the United States history. Jim is also the author of a legal thriller, Acts of Omission, nominated for the Harper Lee Legal Fiction Award, and awarded the Talk Radio Firebird Award for being the top legal thriller in 2020. It's a must-read for young lawyers. But without further ado, Jim, welcome back to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, Jim. Thank you very much for having me on.
You know, before we go further, I'd like to start with a question. What's the difference between a personal injury case and a medical malpractice case?
Well, most personal injury cases are things that happen around us in our houses, when we're driving, when we're using products, when we're in a normal everyday activities and someone gets injured. And the question then, of course, is going to be whether that injury was just one of those things or whether it was caused by someone. And is it actionable? Those are things that all of us understand, things that we do every day. When you get into the field of medical malpractice, that is a extraordinarily complex area that none of us really understand. Doctors spend years and years and years training, learning how to be able to help people in that field. And whenever there's a question about whether something has gone wrong in medical malpractice, that becomes a very sophisticated analysis that has to be done by only by medical experts. And so it's a world different in so many different ways. They're probably the most difficult, most complex, most risky cases that a lawyer can undertake in the field of litigation.
I mentioned that, well, I started by asking you how they differ from a personal injury case. Are there instances where more than one of those doctrines apply? Maybe it's both a medical malpractice and a personal injury case?
Well, sure. I mean, you could have someone injured in a car accident, and they're taken to the hospital. And then when they're in the hospital, something goes wrong. And what should be a relatively minor injury, treatable in an ER, turns into an amputation of a leg or paralysis. And then you have if someone has been responsible for the auto accident, then they're also responsible for bad things that happened in the ER, because the patient wouldn't have been in the ER if they hadn't have negligently caused the injury. But there's also then going to be a question of whether the doctors and or the staff at the hospital breached the standard of care. So you can have two cases going on.
Let me take a call from Jay from Oakland. Jay, you're on your legal rights. You're on the air. Welcome. Jay, are you still with us? Why don't we hang on to him for a minute? It sounds like Jay may have put the phone down a moment. We'll circle back to that. I guess the salient question I have is, why is it sometimes hard to find a lawyer to try a medical malpractice case? I mean, obviously the difficulty of the case comes up, the complexity of that area of law. But it seems to me there's probably more to the question.
There's a lot more to the question. It's difficult to find a lawyer to handle a medical malpractice case because, in the first place, there are very, very few of us that really specialize in that area. And there's reasons for that. The reasons are that they're very complex. They're extremely expensive. It requires a lot of specialized knowledge that most lawyers don't have. And they're very, very expensive. And the most important reason is that they're very difficult to win. So, and there are all kinds of laws set up in the books that create roadblocks for the lawyer and the person who is injured by a medical professional trying to seek some compensation. The roadblocks are pretty devastating, make it very difficult. Help out the folks that are defending the doctors of the hospitals, and do not help out the people that have been injured.
You know, that begs the question, how does somebody finance a medical malpractice claim?
Well, most people that have been badly injured, and lawyers that do what I do, will not usually undertake a case unless there's been a very serious injury. There are lots of good reasons for that. Those people they don't have any means anymore. Very few people that have had that happen to them still have a lot of money in their bank account. Usually they're desperate to get help. They may not be able to work anymore. They have family members that are perhaps have been harmed. They do not have the means to finance a case that can become incredibly expensive. It's going to cost any kind of a not very complicated medical malpractice case is probably going to cost at least $50,000 in just out-of-pocket expenses. And I have one going to trial in December that we have over $400,000 in. People just that have been injured cannot afford that. It has to be financed by the lawyer. And the lawyers do finance these cases. There are a few lawyers that do this work that try to have the clients finance the case, but that's pretty tough for both the lawyer and the client. Those of us that do much of this, we have to finance them ourselves.
Ultimately, when you need your expert, you need your expert, and you can't have somebody saying, I can't do it this week.
That's right. Well, I mean, of course, one of the, you can only prove a medical malpractice case through an expert. And somebody listening on the radio might say, well, how in the world could it cost that much to prepare a medical malpractice case? Well, remember, most of the money goes to medical experts. It's the doctors that are charging on both sides to testify and to give their opinions. And in every case, no matter how horrifying, there's always a doctor on the other side that says, oh, that's perfectly fine. It's perfectly reasonable what happened. That's not a breach of the standard of care. And that's, of course, the ultimate question in the case. The first question is, was there a breach of the standard of care? Second question is, did it cause the injury? And the third question is, what's the injury?
And every time we hear about a drug ad or about a procedure, whatever it is, there's always the potential for a side effect. So I guess the question is this within the realm of what's expected, the risk that the person signed on for? There's a slight chance this will happen, or is this something that clearly reflects some bad activity on the part of the doctor missing this point, or a nurse that's giving the wrong drug, or whatever it might be?
The overwhelming number of things that happen, untoward events, unexpected events, terrible things that can occur during medical care, the overwhelming majority of them are things that are risks and can happen with the best of, in the best of hands. That the fact that you have a bad result is in no way indicative of medical malpractice.
It's not dispositive in any event.
It certainly is not. I mean, there are inherent risks in everything. Anytime anybody goes in for surgery, there's a risk of infection. You can die. Anytime a doctor has to cut open the skin, bad things can happen. You can have medical procedures and have a coagulopathy occur and a thrombus and a stroke and devastating results that really have nothing to do with the doctor doing something wrong. The question is, was this caused by, can we prove that this was caused by something the doctor did that was not within the standard of care? And the standard of care is established by expert testimony. People that charge $1,000, $1,500 an hour to talk to you.
Let me try again with Jim from Oakland.
Hi.
Hi, you're on the air. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you. Hi. It's actually about personal injury. And that is, my car was stationary and a car backed slowly, was heading toward me. I kept honking and saying, honking like, stop, stop. And they didn't stop and they bumped into me. And I wonder if there's a statutory limitation of, at the time of they wanted to pay me out at the time, and I let them, and I didn't, I accepted the money. There was nothing written about it. And let's see, and my neck wasn't hurting then, but I did see the doctor about it later, and it was documented that I was having pain after the injury, after the accident. And I wondered if there are statutory limitations, because this was back in May, and whether or not I could still and should still pursue them for the accident and injury.
Well, where we start with this is that what you've not talked about a medical malpractice situation. You've talked about an auto accident, and lawyers who do it, what I do, understand those cases as well. But we can't give you advice. No lawyer can give you advice without knowing a lot more than what you're able to tell us during a conversation during a radio show. But I can tell you in general what the principles are that apply. And the general principles are that when there is an injury from an accident, that when the cause of action arises, that is, there's been an injury, there's been somebody's been negligent, and the negligence has caused the injury, that then there are statutes of limitations, and they apply, and you have only a certain amount of time to file a lawsuit in court. When that statute starts, under different circumstances of different kinds of cases, is something that you'd have to be advised by a lawyer that understands exactly what happened in your situation. But there are time limits. Another part of what you asked was, sounded like you said you got some money, but there wasn't anything in writing. That is very a complicated, because if you actually had a settlement and you had it done correctly and there was a release, things like that then that could end your rights. If there was money that changed hands but there wasn't an actual release, that might not have any effect on your rights. And those
And
again
that's
are
the
things that
case.
we can't give advice on a radio station, but those are things you need to talk to a lawyer about.
My suggestion is
Okay,
that
do you know? Oh,
I was
sorry, I'm just asking if you knew what the statute of limitations is in this case.
well, it can be a very complicated question. I can't give anyone a statute of limitations without knowing everything about their case. In general, for some kinds of personal injuries, like auto accidents, it's usually 2 years.
But that could change, for example, if the
Yes.
other driver was working for a government entity. That may be a very
Absolutely.
different thing. My suggestion is that you don't waste time, but the next couple days, call for the lawyer referral service. You're in Oakland, so you can call the Alameda County Bar Association at 510-302-2222. They'll give you a half hour consultation with somebody who will get into the weeds of your case a bit more, be able to answer not just general questions as Jim did, but rather get into the weeds of your case and tell you things that are very specific to your case, good, bad, or indifferent.
Yeah, and Jeff's absolutely right. There are all kinds of different, that's why we can't give advice. There are all kinds of different claim statutes and other things that apply. And depending on whether you're, suing a public entity or a district hospital, or whether there are all kinds of different rules.
But
And that's why people need a lawyer.
the general rule that applies to most situations, and we're not saying it applies to yours, would be 2 days. And for many purposes, if it's a government entity, you have a 6 months to file a claim. That's why you want to get on it now, because that second one is getting kind of close. And
Not
for
a, it wasn't a government entity,
Okay,
I'm
and again,
afraid, or I'm glad, I'm afraid.
the half hour consultation will cost you about 30 or $35. It's highly subsidized in order to get you in the door so you can get some good advice.
I see. But for most car accidents, it's within 2 days.
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
For most car accidents, it is within a 2 day period that needs to be reported.
2 years. 2 years.
2 years. Did I say 2 days?
Oh, two.
Yeah.
Fire me. No, you would want to do that within 2 years, but.
Okay.
Alrighty.
All right. I appreciate it. Thank you.
You don't know who they work for. They might work for a public entity.
Who they used to work for, or they might.
I don't know. We can't give advice, but you know, it's not a medical malpractice case either, and that's what we're here to talk about.
Jim, I wish you the best of luck. Call the Alameda County Bar Association. They have a lawyer referral service. The number is 510-302-2222. And with that, I wish you the best of luck. And let me turn it to Tamara in Richmond. You're on the air. Welcome to Your Legal Rights. Hi.
Hi. Yes. Okay. I have to confess that the last time I listened to this show, Chuck Finney was alive, and I moved away and I came back, and I didn't realize that you changed your format, and it's about a specific topic, not just sort of general questions. So I don't have anything that applies to the medical malpractice, but I just wanted to thank you for continuing the show because I think it's great.
Thank you. And happily, I'm a better lawyer than businessman. Chuck was a good friend, and I used to appear on his show. And when Chuck passed away, I had a chat with the station manager and offered to sit in while he finds a new host. And that was 7.5 years ago.
I'm tearing. Thank you. If I have a general landlord-tenant question, where should I go? I'm in Contra Costa County. I'm in unincorporated in Richmond.
I'm going to try to put together a landlord-tenant question, a landlord-tenant night within the next couple weeks. If it needs immediate attention and landlord-tenant does change quickly, you can try the Contra Costa County Bar.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, I just moved back. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for doing this.
I've got their number if you bear with me 1 second.
Good. I can get an old-fashioned pen. Okay, hold on.
Tell me when you're ready.
I am ready.
Their number is
9. Their number. Okay, go on.
That's my line. Their number is 925. I'm sorry. 825. 925-825-5700.
Oh, okay, 5700. Okay, right. And it's 925. That makes sense. Okay, I didn't know the other area code. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
So it's 925-825-5700, and I wish you the best of luck. And keep an ear out. I'm going to try to set it up in the next couple of weeks.
Okay, thank you. Okay, have a good show. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. So one of the questions I wanted to ask you has to do with the reach of medical malpractice. For example, we know that medical malpractice will cover a physical claim. But is medical malpractice limited to physical injuries or a physical claim? What if someone suffers from emotional distress as a result of the procedure? Is that also covered by medical malpractice?
It is. There are... You can have a physical injury, you can have a emotional injury, you can have pain and suffering, which it can be both physical and emotional. And yes, you have a right to recover. The trouble is in that, unlike all other kinds of cases, in medical malpractice, there are limits on what you can recover. And there are... until 1923, until 2023, a couple years ago, there was an absolute total limit of $250,000 on any kind of injury that was not economic. So if you didn't have an economic injury, that's all you could get. Now that's been hugely raised all the way up in 2023, all the way up to 350. And that is not very much if your life has been destroyed. And it does go up every year for 10 years. It goes up $40,000. I know that's kind of crazy, but if you get hit by somebody like this fellow that got rear-ended. There's no limit on your pain and suffering. There's no limit on your emotional damages. There's no limit on any of that. But in a medical malpractice case, there's an absolute limit. For a death, I mean, what could be worse than losing your only child, for example? Before 2023, you could only get $250,000 for the death of your child. There's no economics involved. It's just the loss of this wonderful loved person, $250,000. Now that has changed. Now you can get $500,000. Wow, it doubled. But you can get a little more each year. This year now, it's been gone up $50,000 a year. It'll only do this for 10 years. So this year you can get $600,000. And next year you'll be able to get $650,000 for the death of your loved one. Now, that's not economics. That's just the loss of this person in your life, which is maybe the worst thing that could happen to us. And that's medical malpractice. Doesn't apply to any other kinds of injuries.
And doesn't it cost pretty much that much just to get the case ready for trial?
Oh yeah. Yeah, well, no. I mean, it doesn't cost $500,000 in most cases to get it ready for trial. There have been cases where it could cost that much. That would be very unusual. Spending that kind of money on a case usually is only the most complex cases with lots of different experts. For example, I do a lot of birth injury cases. And in a birth injury case, you have so many different issues. It's hard, it'd almost take the rest of the hour to explain them all, but you're gonna have to have an obstetrician, a maternal fetal specialist. You're gonna have to have a pediatric neurologist. You're gonna have to have a perinatal nurse. You're gonna have to have a neonatologist. You're gonna have to have a pediatric neuroradiologist, you're going to have a placentologist. It goes on and on. And that's just to prove the liability of the case. Then you get into damages. You have to have rehab experts. You have to have speech experts. You have to have life care planners. You have to have economists. This is the nature of the beast in a medical malpractice case and in a complex one. And they have these kinds of limits. Yes, you can pass the limits for all of your damages other than economic just on your costs that the lawyer is spending to get the case ready.
Do you typically recover those costs if you prevail?
If you prevail, you do. If you do not prevail, I don't know any lawyers that go and ask their clients to pay them back. I would never do it. They've lost their case. They may have lost a loved one. They may have lost their quality of life. That's my problem if the case is not successful.
So investing this much in a case, it sounds like quite a gamble.
Medical malpractice cases are probably the riskiest, most serious gamble that a lawyer can undertake. But let's be real about it. If the case is not extremely clear, if the case is not what I call an oh my God case, if you don't have really, really good experts, you should not be filing that case. So, you know, you should be really clear that something happened that should not have happened, and there's a very serious catastrophic injury.
And that you could prove it.
And that you can prove it, exactly. And you've got the very best experts, not people that are just going to tell you what you want to hear and make $1,000 an hour. No, people that don't want to be in the courtroom, don't want to get involved, but say, I got to stand up and be counted on this one. This isn't right. That's the kind of expert that you want. And there, I just so you understand the statistics, 80 to 90% of the medical malpractice cases that go to trial are won by the defense. The plaintiff loses. Now, of course,
that's a huge statistic. I want to pick it up there, but we do have to break for station ID. You're listening to Your Legal Rights. We'll be back right after this.
There was this one mystery I wanted to solve. It was my father. I'd never met him. I didn't know where he was. I didn't really know what had happened to him. But I was always curious, especially because nobody wanted to talk about him.
Join us for more true stories told live. Next time, Family Secrets. That's the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
The Moth Radio Hour tonight at 7 o'clock on 91.7 FM, KALW San Francisco, and online at KALW.org along with the KALW app. Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. And if you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Law Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information. We now return to Jeff Hayden for Your Legal Rights on KALW.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm Jeff Hayden. Tonight we're discussing medical malpractice law with nationally recognized trial lawyer James Bostwick, who obtained the largest medical malpractice jury verdict in U.S. history. If you have questions for my guest, our phone number is 415-841-4134. Once again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And as always, you can call us with any question on tonight's topic. We're talking about medical malpractice law. You're not limited to the exact point we may be in our conversation by any means. You know, as a lawyer, one thing that comes to mind now, I don't practice civil law, I don't file lawsuits. So for me, it's a little different. But for my friends that practice in civil cases, I'm told that for a lot of different cases, where you file a case may be key. It may even determine the outcome. Is there a difference in locations where the case might be litigated? I mean, do you expect that you'll get similar judicial rulings and jury verdicts in, say, Alameda County as you might in Orange County?
Well, yes, there's a huge difference. If you think about the demographics of various places that where people live, in terms of judicial rulings, no, because judges should make their decisions based on the law and precedent, and that applies the same in all of the different areas of California. So in theory, I'm not going to say that you wouldn't maybe get a little hometowning, you know, if the judge knows the defense lawyer and they don't know you, but that doesn't mean that the judge is not going to follow the law. But in terms of the jury, which is the most important question, who's going to make the decision, the jurors are very different in different areas. There are very, very conservative areas where it's very hard to win a jury verdict. And there are other areas that are more, quote, liberal, unquote, where it is considered easier, simply because people maybe are more used to their socioeconomic situation is such that they're more used to understanding someone else going through a difficult time. I'm not sure I necessarily know the reasons for it, but it's well established that you can get better results in certain areas like, let's say, Alameda County, and you would necessarily get in Redding, California, for example, or in some little county up in the mountains. Part of that, especially in medical malpractice, part of that is because nobody on the jury may have even close to knowing the doctors or hospitals involved. Whereas in a little tiny area where there aren't that many people, everyone may know the doctor or know someone who knows the doctor, or they may all use that hospital. And by the way, I think it's important to explain why those figures are what I said, that 80 to 90% lost. Partly it gives you a little bit of a false impression, because a lot of cases that are very meritorious get settled out of court before they get to trial. So there is a bit of a selection process going on. And my feeling is that often, not always, but often, someone is making a serious mistake by not being sensible and trying to realize their risks when you get to trial. The other primary reason why it's so difficult to win a medical malpractice case is everybody on that jury is going to need a doctor and a hospital, and their families are going to need doctors and hospitals during their lifetime. And none of us, we all do. And we all want to think that they don't do anything wrong. We all want to think that they don't make mistakes, because we're kind of stuck with relying upon them. So there's a subconscious bias in favor of thinking this doctor, I don't want to believe this doctor or this hospital did anything wrong. And that's got to be overcome during the plaintiff's case.
Isn't that kind of human nature, though, that we want to trust the police, we want to trust first responders, we want to trust the doctors, we want to trust the hospitals?
Absolutely. It applies in first responder cases, too. Absolutely.
We're making people feel pretty uneasy if these figures that we count on can't be counted on.
Yes, that does not apply, however, if you're suing some huge corporation that's made a product that hurt you, or you're suing Budweiser truck that rear-ended you. The jury doesn't have quite the same concern, and those cases are not as difficult.
Spread the pain broadly. Let me turn it to Lisa in San Jose. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, can you hear me?
We hear you fine, and you're on the air.
Oh, great. Okay, thank you. I'm calling regarding not so much the malpractice side of it, but the practice of the business side of it. And so my story goes like this. I was a healthy individual. I was doing, exercising and dieting, and you just couldn't get rid of that stubborn belly fat. And so I kept getting these ads on social media for Groupon for cold sculpting. And one of them was a chiropractor in the Bay Area. And so I said, hey, I looked him up. He had really good Yelp reviews. So I bought the ad on Groupon. And it didn't go. I didn't think it went through because they didn't send a receipt. And so I went through again. Like a few minutes later, I put it through again. So now I've purchased it twice, and still I couldn't. I saw that it had already posted to my credit card. So I tried calling the office. The guy wasn't picking up. This went on for a few weeks. And so I finally, and Groupon does not have a good customer service base. So I finally, it took me a really long time. I did finally get through to Groupon. They said, well, call the office. So I did get a hold of the guy. He goes, yeah, well, I've been moving my office, so I'm in transition. If you come down right away, I will honor this request. He called it a request. even though I had paid doubly. And I'm like, hey, wait a minute now. So I go down there and he said, yeah, I don't honor Groupon anymore, but I will give you the same price. So now I've paid three times. And he said, and I will help you get Groupon to pay you back your money. Like, I'm like, but again, it was a bit of vanity. I'm working out every week, you know, and dieting and exercising my guts out. And I just wanted that curvy, you know, that curvy, beautiful belly, right? So I do the Zerona, was what it was called. And it did help a little bit, but, you know, it's not what they say. It's something like it helps a little bit, like a few centimeters at a time. So I go through the whole package of it, and he says, well, I'm going to do it again. Well, in addition to that, I have scoliosis. I have had a curved spine since I was a child, and I had a world-renowned surgeon in Stanford do my spinal surgery when I was a kid. And I don't let people touch my spine because most doctors will look at my spine and either they just see, you know, cha-ching, they're just like, oh, we're going to need plenty of work on you. Or they look at it and go, nah, I can't do anything with that. And plus, I don't want to get hurt.
Well,
so,
understood why you're making those decisions, but medical malpractice really aims at a little different situation. Some of the business practices probably are something you could resolve without a lawyer by disputing with your credit card. I think you know how to do that. You've done a few of those over the years.
Well, what happened was, so I talked to the guy. I'm like, hey, you know, you've tried. So he wanted me. So then he says, you know, I know that I could fix your spine. And I was coming into his office 2-3 times a week, and I was watching him crack spines. And I'm like, nah, this guy's a cruncher. I'm not a cruncher. No. So then he says, come on, let me just try it. So he takes my credit card. He's going to charge me for one treatment. And he just pushes me up against the wall and tries to just crack my spine. And it hurt like crazy. And so now I can't walk. He says, oh, just go and ice it. You'll be fine. But he really hurt me. And then
how are you doing today?
Well, so that's the long story of it. So I...
Give us a short version because you're on the radio.
So I felt a little foolish. I didn't have great insurance at the time. I was just icing it. I'm like, okay. So I kept swimming and kept doing what I needed to do. But when he charged me that $60 for that one treatment, he accidentally charged me $6,000. And so now I'm into this for $7,800. And so I call him and like, hey, no. And he goes, oh, that was an accident. I, you know, my business partner didn't, you know, hasn't been in. So I charged it back to the credit card company. So he calls me when he finds out. And the guy was coming in like tired.
I really don't want to cut you off, but I have to. We're not on topic for tonight's topic. Tonight we're talking about medical treatments and medical malpractice. Yours is really more of a credit dispute.
What happened was the guy ended up, he's like, oh, please, please, please don't charge it back. The next day he got into a boating accident and died. And, so I tried to sue his estate. I tried to, you know, write it up. And I have found now, when you go to alternative care to chiropractors or acupuncturists, a lot of people do not have their rates posted. And because they don't give receipts anymore, everything's over your phone.
I would suggest that you take this to the lawyer referral service. This is more of a creditor issue that you can deal with the credit card, probably with the assistance of an attorney, but it's a slippery slope. And what I'm hearing is that you felt at many junctures that you had gone to the wrong place or made a bad decision. And it sounds like you kept doubling down and things got worse and exponentially worse. Be very careful with the quality of care. Look very closely at credentials and understand that Yelp reviews can be a wonderful tool, but they can also be bought and paid for. Before we finish up tonight, I did want to give you a chance, Jim, to give us a, to walk us through a couple of examples. One of them was, we're not talking about a doctor at all, but a nurse administers the wrong medication and the patient dies. What kind of law governs? Is this the kind of medical malpractice case, even though there's not a doctor involved?
Well, yes, absolutely. Because a nurse works for somebody. Presumably that was a patient in a hospital. The nurse works for the hospital. And we file actions against hospitals all the time based on what nurses did or didn't do. We don't file the action against the nurse because we are more interested in the employer being responsible for the actions of their employee. Or maybe the nurse worked for a clinic, and so we would sue the clinic. Or possibly the nurse worked for a doctor, and we would then sue the doctor as the employer. But usually you don't actually sue the nurse. You sue the employer of the nurse. And of course, administering the wrong medication and the patient dying, that could be a very clear situation. But I'm going to have to ask all kinds of questions. I need to know, are there any heirs of that patient? I need to know how old that patient was. I'm going to need to know whether they were working or not. I'm going to need to know lots of things, practical things, that are going to help me decide whether it's a case I could even consider handling. Because remember, a death is not an economic occurrence. It's a loss of a loved one. However, if they were working and supporting a family, then it's economic. If they are, your only child, that's not an economic occurrence. And there are limits on how much you can recover, not in any other kinds of case, but in a medical malpractice case. So there's lots of questions I would need to answer before I could ever consider undertaking that case.
You know, you're mentioning of the limits to the recovery reminded me, I meant to ask you, it used to be that the attorney's fees themselves were limited by law, such that it was hard to recover enough to cover the costs in a case, at least much of the time. Has that eased up any?
Yes, it has. At the same time that they eased up these the limits on what we call non-economic damages, they also eased up on the attorney's fees. The fees were very strictly limited after a certain amount. And in a larger case, they were really basically not much more than 15 or 16%. And now you can obtain as much as 33% if the case isn't tried. And that is now allowed by law. That has been the standard fee for lawyers in all kinds of injury cases, whether it's a rear ender or whatever it is, for many, many, many decades. Only in the last couple of years do medical malpractice lawyers get to earn the same as other lawyers handling injury cases. That does help in finding a lawyer, because there is more incentive now for the lawyer.
We're starting to wind our way toward the end of the hour, and I didn't want to let the hour go by without asking you and giving you a chance to tell us some of them, about some of the memorable cases you've worked on over the years. I heard a rumor that one of your cases actually ended up being featured on the news with Walter Cronkite.
Yeah, I led. Many of the listeners might not even know who that is, but Walter Cronkite was the only news show to watch back in the day, and he had the 6 o'clock news, and our story was the lead story, 6 o'clock news nationally.
For those who didn't know, that was before we had Fox News and CNN and all these different news outlets with different political perspectives. You had just the national news on the major networks, and Walter Cronkite was the one man that everyone in America trusted. It was an amazing voice for that era. And you were in front of him.
Yes, I was. It was all, they had video of us. It was quite amazing. It's even on my website. We still have the video of it, but it was the largest jury verdict medical malpractice case at the time in the history of the country. And it was more than twice what the highest one had ever been before that. And nowadays people would say, well, that doesn't sound like it's that much, but then it was quite extraordinary. And it was, it was a terrible case involving a young woman, a kid really, who was only 13 years old when she was diagnosed with thyroid cancer, and in trying to treat it, they burned her spinal cord and she became a quadriplegic. When we went to trial in the case, she was 18 years old. But the way they were treating things in those days was just the beginning of radiotherapy, of radiation therapy for cancer. And there were only 100 radiation experts in the world at the time. And I had to find one of them that would help me. And that was quite a search, I'll tell you. I could tell stories about that case for many hours, but anyway, it was interesting.
So we have but a few minutes left, and I'd like you to talk me through, just walk us basically through the process. Family members had a bad and unexpected result following what should have been, or at least we believe should have been, a routine medical procedure. What's the first thing that I should do?
Well, the absolutely first thing you should do people really need to look out for their own rights when their loved ones or they themselves are being treated. Because if you don't speak up, if you don't ask questions, and if your family doesn't stay with you and speak up and ask questions, then, you know, that may make a difference in the care you get. Doctors and nurses are human. They respond to the squeaky wheel. So I'd say the first thing you do is watch out for yourself and make sure you ask a lot of questions and watch out for your loved ones. Then if disaster has actually struck and there is a, you know, serious problem going on, then, you know, you should not be threatening lawsuits or anything like that. You don't want to get crosswise. You want to keep yourself or your loved one getting good care. But you then want to, on your own, start talking to someone to determine what your rights are. And you need to talk to, and not just any lawyer, but you'd have to talk to somebody who is a specialist in medical malpractice. Just like if you had a product injury, you need to talk to somebody who's a specialist in product liability, things like that. You need a specialist. If you have a cancer problem, you need to talk to an oncologist, not to a family practice doctor. You need a specialist.
And just to be clear, we've been talking about this before the show and on other occasions in which it's really clear. Doctors and nurses perform a tremendous service, and overwhelmingly, they get it right.
Yes.
And there are times when things don't go well through no fault of anybody, whether it's the patient's genetics or just something that has nothing to do with the fault of the doctor or nurses. But when things go wrong, there are very few people to take that case, and you're the best of the best.
Well, and we get, you know, 30, 40 calls a day from people that have had something horrible happen. And the overwhelming majority of them, it turns out it's not because of medical malpractice. It's just a bad result. And let's be clear, a bad result is not medical malpractice. A fact, something happened that nobody expected, that does not mean it's medical malpractice. There are a lot of hoops to jump through before you can find a situation where the doctor actually or nurse did something that is a breach of the standard of care.
And has been said by many a lawyer, you're a lawyer that you hope they never need, because it's not a ticket to riches. It's a sad truth, and all you can do is try to mitigate the damage.
That's the best and the worst thing about what I do, is that I can't make them better. The doctors often can, but I can't. When disaster has struck, I can't make them, I can't change that, but I can make a change in their life. I can help them. I can help this family. I can help them have some financial security. I can help them get the supervision or therapy or a care they need. You know, if a family has a brain damaged child from a birth injury, for example, they're going to have to deal with that the rest of their lives, and they're going to need a lot of help. And at least I can give them some help with that and some financial security for that their loved one that has been damaged. That is the best part of what I do.
You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. Tonight, we've been discussing medical malpractice law. Our guest tonight has been catastrophic injury and medical malpractice attorney and friend of this broadcast, James S. Bostwick, a nationally recognized trial lawyer with over 45 years' experience, who obtained several record results for his clients over the years, including the largest medical malpractice jury verdict in U.S. history. And Jim, thank you for joining us. And please be sure to join us on Your Legal Rights next week, Wednesday at 6 o'clock, where we will discuss intelligent justice. Is that another alternative dispute resolution, or is this something different and superior? Best of all, as always, we will take your calls and answer your questions. A big thanks to tonight's guest, Jim Bostwick, and to all of you for listening. And at the controls tonight, we have the tag team duo of Elaine LeYoung and Damian D. Minor. I'm Jeff Hayden. Good night, be safe, and zealously guard your legal rights.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. And if you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Law Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. You can call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information. We'll be right back.